Focus Focus, I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. Before we get started, a reminder that we are in the midst of KABU's Winter Pledge Drive. KABU is commercial-free, volunteer-powered radio made possible by people like you. Not only that, KABU has trained thousands of people how to make radio, all for free, thanks to the support we receive from our members. So help us reach our $15,000 fundraising goal. Just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Thanks for supporting community-powered radio. Oregon's 2022 short legislative session is drawing to a close. While short sessions, which happen during even years, often focus on budgets, unfinished business, and a limited set of new policy ideas, this year is different. Numerous bills have been introduced and are now making their way through the legislative process that address climate, environmental justice, farm worker protections, transportation, protecting the Elliott State Forest, and a number of other vital concerns. Today we talk with Julia DeGraw, Oregon League of Conservation Voters Coalition Director, about the status of all these bills and what kind of meaningful change we can hope from this session. Julia, welcome back to Locus Focus.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
It's been a while.
It has been quite a while. Oh my goodness.
It's really nice to see you in person, actually.
It's really nice to be in person, finally.
So actually, I need to let you know, though, that we are not live in the KABU studio. We're recording this on March 3rd. And the Oregon legislative session is drawing to a close, as I mentioned before. But things may have really changed between now and the time that the show airs on March 7th. Well, I wanted to start by talking about what's making this legislative session so much different from other short sessions. And the first thing that actually that came to my mind is the Republicans haven't left town. So why is that?
I mean, it's not like I have a crystal ball or I can tell you definitively why that hasn't happened, but I think that there's a lot going on. I think that there are bills on the table that Republicans want to see get over the finish line, so that's keeping them in the building. And I think that we all know from what we've seen in reports in the news that Oregonians expect their legislators to stay in the building and get the job done. So I think Republicans realized that they needed to stay in the building and do their jobs.
Well, it seems like some of the stuff that's being brought before the session this year are holdovers from actually the session that got stopped. Actually, two sessions. It was in 2019 and 2020 that the Republicans walked out of both sessions and stopped a whole lot of bills besides the ones they were actually trying to stop from happening. So I'm wondering how much of what's going on this year is still like picking up the slack from what didn't happen for 2 years before.
Well, I mean, in 2021, we did get through the last full session. That was my first full session at the Oregon State Legislature during my time at Oregon League of Conservation Voters. But there were a lot of bills that didn't make it over the finish line in 2021, and those did carry over here into the short session. So I think in general, especially on climate change, we lost, you know, two sessions of progress on climate change because of Republican walkouts. And I think that was where the real urgency was in making sure that we didn't lose yet another session. You know, we're at a point where this is an existential crisis and we can't take a year off on climate change. So that actually, we did end up getting some really incredible progress even for a short session on that front.
Well, considering the last IPCC report that just came out, which only gives us 7 years now before doomsday strikes, I'm wondering how much impetus that is giving the legislators to actually make some meaningful changes that will really actually help us to stave off the worst consequences of impending climate change.
Well, we're at the point where the legislature is definitely doing what I think, political entities across the state are trying, across the country are trying to do, and across the globe, frankly, which is a combination of resilience and mitigation. And unfortunately, that's where we're at, right? You know, we're going to have more extreme weather events. We're going to have more extreme wildfire seasons. And we need to make sure that homes are being built more safely, that people and property are going to be more protected during those times, that farm workers are going to be safer, you know, out working in the fields or allowed to not work if it's not safe enough to do so, right? You know, there's so many things we need to be doing to be preparing for climate change, but there's still a lot of work we need to be doing to make sure it's not worse than it needs to be. You know, decarbonizing our buildings and transportation sector are going to be major priorities moving forward if we're going to, you know, get to where we need to be in this 7-year period of time you just referenced.
Well, let's break down what measures are there to address mitigation and resilience, and which ones are there to help to make sure that climate change doesn't get any worse than it's already getting?
Yeah. So in this session, again, it's the short session, so it's hard often to pass big comprehensive policy unless it's been worked on for a long time. So I mentioned before decarbonization of buildings. The second largest source for carbon pollution and greenhouse gases in the state of Oregon is our built environment, which a lot of people don't realize that. And we really have to do something dramatic to both build buildings more efficiently and not using fossil fuels or methane. And we also need to be able to increase energy efficiency and transition off of fossil fuels in our existing buildings. And we actually had a bill this session, the REACH code bill, that by the end of session ended up getting changed to the Rebuild Task Force. And the purpose of that task force is to explore and make recommendations to the state legislature on comprehensive decarbonization policy for buildings, both new and existing buildings, for the 2023 session. So while we didn't get the original bill, which was unfinished business from the previous session, passed this session, which would have required or would have allowed municipalities to opt in for 10% higher energy efficiency for new buildings, which is progress and important. We did end up getting the foundation for what will hopefully be very broad, sweeping, and comprehensive policy for all buildings for the next full session. So we feel, you know, good about that deal.
Yeah, I was wondering if you feel like that's a trade-off of pushing this off for probably 2 years to make any meaningful change, but that the meaningful change might be more meaningful.
Right. And you think about, how if you're going to put a lot of work and effort into passing legislation, it needs to be meaningful. And I think we did make the decision that while REACH codes now would be good, getting this task force that would lead to comprehensive policy and get everyone, all the stakeholders at the table together to talk about that policy and make recommendations was worth it. Because frankly, you know, we didn't have that solid path for how we're going to get there in 2023 for this comprehensive policy. And this provides that path. So,
well, just sort of an aside, I've been getting a few emails about how the Portland Public Schools has just passed a policy change, which is to decarbonize their buildings. And are you familiar with that at all?
I've heard about it in passing. I think it happened like during the legislative session.
It just happened a few days ago.
Yeah, so I'm so all session all the time, but I did hear about that.
So I thought that was very promising. I know also that Vancouver, people in Vancouver, Washington, are pushing for that city to decarbonize its buildings. So this seems to be the new frontier for addressing climate change. Now, is there anything else in the session that has to deal with climate chaos that is coming to a vote?
Well, the state has to pass an omnibus, a very large comprehensive budget bill for the short session, and within that large budget bill, we got this bill was only published very recently, so we have to kind of, you know, dig in there and see exactly what's in it, but we're expecting to come out of this session with a massive investment of $100 million toward a climate resiliency budget. And it's going to be a combination of electrification and doing things to mitigate climate change, to make it less bad, as well as helping people and communities be more resilient to it. So it's going to have a combination of both those things. And that's a significant amount of funding going toward this really important priority.
Well, let's talk about another aspect of addressing climate change. And that has to do with, I think it's called natural carbon sequestration. And I'm thinking about the Ellicott State Forest and how that is an amazing opportunity to sequester carbon in the ground. So let's talk a bit about what the bill around that is and how that's progressing.
Yeah, definitely. I actually kind of want to expand out here for a second and talk about the fact that this session, we have two historic bills that came forward and are going to pass with bipartisan support that are genuinely laying down a new foundation for forest policy moving forward in our state. And you and I have been paying attention for a long time to forest policy in the state of Oregon, or the lack thereof. And we are really hitting a historic moment where we're going to be actually managing our forest lands in a way that isn't just looking at timber interests, frankly. So that's really exciting. And one of those bills this session is the Elliott State Research Forest Bill. I don't know if folks recall, but about 3 years ago, there was this huge fight over the Elliott. There was a move to sell it to private interests just for profit. And, you know, Oregon League of Conservation Voters and a coalition of groups, including Audubon Society and many, many others, came together and fought for the Elliott to keep it in public hands. And since then, we succeeded. P.S. We succeeded. And since then, all the stakeholders have been hammering out a deal to figure out how the Elliott Forest should be managed moving forward. And this bill, this legislative session, was incredible because it created a new oversight entity that would be looking over the forest that is ultimately overseen by the Department of State Lands. So there's still like a public oversight there where people have a way to weigh in. And the most important thing here is we had it set up so that the money made from logging the Elliott was funding our public schools, the Common School Fund. That is an archaic and inappropriate way for us to be funding schools, especially at this point in the state's history, not that it ever really made sense. So what this bill does is it finalizes that decoupling with the Common School Fund, and it actually made the Common School Fund whole with $121 million. So it's a really historic moment. The bill was supported by tribes, by environmental groups, by counties. I mean, just groups that normally can't agree on anything. So it was it's a really incredible moment, and I think actually kind of marks a way that we can be doing this work moving forward.
Well, how did you get all those timber-dependent counties on board for this?
I mean, I think part of this was their schools are going to be funded, so they no longer felt like they're, you know, schools or the forest. You know, we took away that dichotomy, and I think that this is something that's very true. We all love the land, you know, and it's still an Elliott. It's still a research forest. OSU will be managing it for research. And it was a compromise. It's not zero cut. There is going to be some logging that happens on this forest. That's what, you know, and that's how you kind of know you've reached a compromise. There's some folks who wanted to see every single inch of the Elliott protected into perpetuity. And then there was this political reality that we had to navigate, right? But we got a really smart deal that in the long run will lead to, you know, the Elliott being really well protected into the future and for habitat and carbon sequestration and all the things that are going to be best for Oregonians for the long term and for wildlife.
Now, you mentioned, was there another bill about forest issues too?
Yeah. So the other big historic moment is the private forest accords. So similarly, things came to a head, I'm trying to think how many years ago, but there was conservation groups got together and were like, we are going to pass ballot measures to improve forest policy in the state of Oregon so we can stop clear cutting and we can protect drinking water on public lands and we can start seeing the results that we need to see from how we're managing our public lands and our forest lands in the state and our private forest lands on the state. And of course, that led to the opposition coming forward with their ballot measures, and the state, the government, the governor's office came in and was just like, hey, y'all need to get together and develop policy on how we're going to manage private forest land in the state of Oregon. And they did it. It's really similar to the Elliott. Stakeholders got together and hashed it out. And came up with the Private Forest Accords, which is a set of three bills, it turns out. We couldn't do it in just one. That really transformed how we manage private forest lands in the state of Oregon, that takes into account protecting river and riparian areas more, and managing those lands for more than just, you know, logging purposes. So that is laying basically a whole new foundation for how we can approach forest policy in the state of Oregon moving forward. And it's a pretty historic moment, again, that you have groups that had not been able to get into agreement for literally decades coming together on a deal that they could all agree upon and the legislature moving forward and passing it.
Well, you're listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Seattle stations KPFG LPFM and KODX LPFM, KMUN and KCBB in Astoria, KCEI in Taos, New Mexico, Radio Free Moscow in Idaho, and Radio Tacoma. And today we're talking with Julia DeGraw, Oregon League of Conservation Voters Coalition Director, about what is transpiring in Salem as the 2022 short session draws to a close. And I want to remind you that now is a good time to become a member of KBOO during our Winter Pledge Drive. KBOO programming focuses on local communities, artists and activists, and people like you. So join now and help us to meet our $15,000 goal. Just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Or you can mail a check to KBOO FM, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. And thanks for supporting community-powered radio. Well, moving on to some other environmental issues, which I think we're going to be mainly talking about environmental issues today, but there's some other kind of social justice issues. There's a new council that has been being created, I understand, the Environmental Justice Council.
Yes, there's the Environmental Justice Council, and I'd also be remiss if we didn't touch base on the emergency heat relief bills as well, which I realize probably should have fallen under the climate resiliency, but it's also an environmental justice issue. And in response to the massive heat dome event that we had last summer. So I want to make sure we touch base on those really historic and important pieces of legislation as well. But in terms of the Environmental Justice Task Force, it was also unfinished business, frankly, from the previous session. It's actually not so bad that it didn't get done last time, because this was an updated and improved version of it that would house an Environmental Justice Council in the office of the governor, making it permanent, provide funding for staffing of that council, which really deserves to have that additional resource to do its work. The biggest part of this bill, and also the council used to be called the Environmental Justice Task Force, and it changed the name to council. The really large part of this is very exciting, is it provides funding for environmental justice mapping across the state of Oregon. And that is a tool that policymakers and leaders can use to help guide future policy and just paint a picture in the state of Oregon of where there are inequities and what we could be doing to address those problems. And it also does a really incredible job of defining how broad environmental justice communities really are defined in the state of Oregon. And I really hope it's going to help us approach policymaking in a new way, where we're really genuinely trying to center impacted communities and folks who've been really left out of the process. It definitely, I think, is going to be a tool for engaging communities in the policymaking decisions that are going to affect their lives. So there's a lot of exciting things, I think, that can come out of the Environmental Justice Task Force, which is expected to pass this session.
Okay, you just said task force.
Environmental Justice Council.
But
yes.
That's one of my questions is there a significance in changing it from a task force to a council?
In this situation, I'm not exactly sure what the significance is of that name change. I just know that it made this office permanent and housed it in the governor's office, rather than having it be something that is just at the whim of the governor, that can come and go based on the whims of a governor. It makes the office permanent. And that's what was really important.
As I think of task force as being something ad hoc, it's something that you do to address a specific issue, and then it's dealt with and then it goes away. So a council, on the other hand, sounds more permanent to me.
I think that's why they did the name change, was to really signify that this is a permanent entity that exists in the governor's office.
Well, let's talk about the heat relief issue.
Yes. So we have been working closely with the folks who are leading on this, which is Verde and the Community Alliance of Tenants. They have been working tirelessly to draft this legislation since the massive heat dome event that we had last year, in which almost 100 Oregonians died across the state, many of them in their homes, due to lack of air conditioning. And it really showed us that, first of all, tenants need to be able to put air conditioner units into their apartments. It turned out, we all learned that that landlords were allowed to tell tenants that they weren't allowed to have air conditioners. So the Senate bill, the emergency heat relief for renters bill, made it so that landlords are no longer able to deny their tenants the ability to install air conditioning. But it also created a fund to incentivize landlords to transition to or to install electric heat pumps to provide heating and cooling to their tenants. And it also requires that new construction for apartment buildings would install heating and cooling, not just heating. And it also had some funding in there for emergency shelter for folks during extreme weather events, whether it's hot or cold. The bill in the House was really geared toward the emergency response. So there was a huge, there was a fund that was created to stockpile air conditioners and make those available to municipalities to disseminate during the next major heat event. But there was also a fund that was created for low-income folks to apply to transition from transition to electric heating and cooling, probably, you know, electric heat pumps, and really focusing on communities and families that are using bulk fuels for their heating, you know, or wood fireplaces. And those can always be safe backups, you know, for when the power goes out. But we're trying to create an incentive for low-income folks with really inefficient forms of heating and cooling to transition to electric heat pumps. So it's these are two really huge pieces of legislation that got combined into one piece in Ways and Means and are working their way through the process, and we're expected to pass with bipartisan support. Very exciting.
Well, I think the one thing we haven't covered on the list that we were talking about before the show is the farm worker overtime bill, which also seems to be pretty historic. So what's happening with that?
It is the definition of historic. I think just to give people a quick background on this, when the Labor Rights Act was passed in 1938, quite on purpose, farm workers were excluded from that act because they were predominantly at that time former slaves. And it was very, very intrinsically a racist decision to exclude farm workers from overtime pay. And that inequity has continued to exist up to this day. And neighboring states in Washington and California have passed legislation in their states that have enacted farm worker overtime. And we think that the West Coast needs to, you know, entirely be, you know, rectifying this historic wrong. And we did find an Oregon solution. This bill has been worked on so hard this session to try to make this bill, this transition, work for both for farmers and for the farm workers. And both sides had to give quite a bit to get to the place that we're at. But some of the places where we would not move is that farmers need to be paid for all of their overtime after 40 hours. That was not a movable object. So, and there were, anyway, it was a really incredible process watching our partners in PACOON and the Oregon Just Transition Alliance getting together with environmental groups and labor unions across the state to push this bill over the finish line. It was the bill that if anything was going to get the Republicans to walk out, it would be this one. but everyone stayed in the building and got it done. So the Farm Worker Overtime Bill is a really historic moment, and the work is going to continue.
Another bill that we haven't talked about yet is a bill we talked about on the show a few weeks ago, the Treasury Transparency Bill. So let's talk about what's happening with that bill.
The Treasury Transparency Bill kind of looked like it wasn't going to move. And then all of a sudden it got scheduled for hearing in House rules and moved to the floor of the House. And it's now, you know, made it through the House and is expected to pass the Senate. And this bill is part of a larger movement. The Divest Oregon folks have been working on this a lot, and it is a step that needs to be taken to know how the state retirement fund is being invested. We actually have to know what's being invested in order to know what to do with it. So it just creates transparency around that and saves the conversation for divestment and any other legislation that would have to be passed to make that possible for another day. But it's a really great, important step in starting a conversation about, you know, how we're investing, you know, the state retirement fund.
Well, I understand that one of the biggest obstacles to getting this bill passed was the state treasurer himself.
There was a really unfortunate hearing early on, and I think that's exactly what put the brakes on this bill early on in session. I don't know exactly how, you know, communications maybe got crosswise with them. I'm not sure what happened, but testimony that was given during the hearing was confusing and kind of frankly misleading about what was actually in the bill. And I think it really just put the bill on ice for a while before things could be worked out. I think there was just confusion from them about what was actually in the bill, which is really unfortunate.
Whose testimony was confusing?
From the Treasury. From this, that was so surprising was the state treasurer's office was testifying in the bill in a way that was very negative and not necessarily based on the substance of what was actually in the bill. And it just, in a short session, you can't afford to lose that kind of time. So I think it's pretty impressive that, you know, the leadership in the Rules Committee was able to recognize like, oh, this is actually a really solid bill. We should move this thing forward. And that's exactly what happened. So we got really lucky that it bounced back from that initial really rocky start.
Actually, when I was talking with the Divest Oregon people a few weeks ago about the bill, they were hoping that it was just going to pass easily because it was one of the least controversial of all the bills. And she was saying, let's just get it done so we can get dealing with the real meat of the session. Ironically, I guess it became one of the more contested bills.
I mean, I think folks had a similar thought about the reach codes. You know, things can get complicated very quickly in the building.
Well, another bill I heard about, and I don't know that much about it, but it was really curious to me because it has to do with the critical energy infrastructure hub here in Portland. So what's happening with that?
So I just so folks are reminded of what exactly that is, the critical energy hub, or what'd you call it?
It's critical energy infrastructure hub, or the CEI hub, known
right.
to its friends.
The CEI hub. For in a more common way of putting that is we have gigantic, huge containers of gas and it's very flammable and very toxic, stored on the banks of the Columbia, not too far from the Willamette either, right next to, you know, the urban center of Southwest Washington and Portland, right in Oregon. And it's basically, especially if you think about when and if the big earthquake hits, it's just a ticking time bomb. And OPS, you know, it's on top of unstable soils. So this is a problem we've known about for a long time, and it's an expensive problem to solve. But Senator Dembro introduced this bill that would at least get a risk assessment where we can really start getting a sense of what is the totality of risk at this hub that we're dealing with, so we can then start wrapping our minds around what to do about it. And that's what this piece of legislation would do. And it is passing through the state legislature as we speak. So I think it might have actually passed both chambers already. But it's one of those things where I'm really grateful that something is happening. And I'm also like, oh my goodness, it's an assessment. We need, let's do this as quickly as possible so we can move on to solving it, right?
Well, I know that the county had this very amazing study that they sponsored that was released a couple weeks ago. And I went to the press conference and they're talking about the study is going to lead to a plan. It sort of reminds me of a line from Annie Hall, the Woody Allen movie. We start out with a notion and then it gets into an idea and then it's a concept and then a plan. And it's like 2 years before any action would be happening. And so I asked at the press conference, what do we do in the meantime if it hits?
It's nerve-wracking. I mean, it is genuinely nerve-wracking. And I think that, you know, that I understand we really need this information in order to know how to solve the problem. So I feel like the accountability and the action can happen swiftly once we've done this assessment. So I'm glad to see the state moving on this. But yes, the local municipalities, you know, we've got our work cut out for us on this. And we got to really hope that there isn't a huge disaster between now and then.
Well, this session sounds so much different than the last several sessions where it seemed like progressives were just beating their heads against the wall trying to get listened to and trying to get bills passed. What do you think has made the difference this time around?
Well, I would say that shift started in 2021. We passed 100% clean legislation to really get us to 100% clean energy in the state of Oregon with a gigantic, almost historic, you know, coalition. And a lot of the groups that were engaged in that, you know, Verde and many others, we're all working toward this emergency heat relief, you know, solution for folks. And I also think that there is a lot of new elected officials in this state legislature that are, you know, younger progressives who are new and really excited about taking on these big challenges, especially climate change. So I think that there is change in the air coming from multiple directions. There's broader based coalitions pushing for huge policy together. And there's new folks in the building that are really eager for change. In this session specifically, I mean, there's actually new leadership. So, and that's going to be even more dramatic in the next session where we're going to have, you know, a really new We're going to have a new Senate president, for goodness sakes. So it's like it's going to be a really dynamic time in Oregon state politics and also in the legislature.
Well, you're listening to Locus Focus on Cable Community Radio in Portland, Seattle stations KBFG, LPFM, and KODX, LPFM, KMUN and KCBB in Astoria, KCEI in Taos, New Mexico, Radio Free Moscow in Idaho, and Radio Tacoma. And today we're talking with Julia DeGraw, Oregon League of Conservation Voters Coalition Director, about what is transpiring in Salem as the 2022 short session draws to a close. And I want to remind you that now is a good time to become a member of KBU during our winter pledge drive. KBU receives 80% of our funding from our listeners, but only 10% of listeners are members. Help increase our member ratio and meet our $15,000 goal by going to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321, or you can mail a check to KBU FM, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Thanks for supporting community-powered radio. I was talking to Bob Salinger a few weeks ago, and he was, you know, as busy as you, Julia, dealing with the session, and his particular focus was the Elliott State Forest bill. He was complaining that there were too many bills that we all wanted to get passed and that we need to learn how to prioritize what's the most important and not just throw the whole kitchen and caboodle to the legislature during each session. And I'm wondering, what's your sense, and do you think that most of the bills that actually were thrown at the legislature stuck to the wall?
It's funny. I work with Bob. I like Bob a lot. I'm going to politely disagree, respectfully disagree. I think that's true sometimes. I think there are some times where, you know, legislators are like, you're asking for too much, and maybe we are. But like, mostly we're not, honestly. We need to be able to walk and chew gum at the same time, right? But this session actually, the Oregon League of Conservation Voters runs a coalition called the Oregon Conservation Network. And it's a coalition of 37 organizations across the state of Oregon that prioritize key conservation and environmental legislation every session. And, you know, we went into this session and we prioritized, the emergency heat relief bill. We prioritized the Elliott, and we prioritized REACH codes, which went on to become the Rebuilding Task Force. And we always prioritize the budget because you got to put, you know, your money where your values are. And so, and then we have a whole other list of bills that we really care about. Farm Worker Overtime and the Environmental Justice Task Force were also very high on our list, as was the Private Forest Accords, because, you know, it's just so crucial to the future of forest policy in the state of Oregon. But then beyond that, there was a bunch of other bills. And they pretty much almost entirely passed. We create this thing called the OCN hot list. It's a list of all of the bills that we want to see passed and all the bills we don't want to see passed. And I mean, really, I can count on less than one hand the number of things that got left behind this session, which isn't normally the case. Last session, we accomplished a lot of things, but there was a lot of bills we left on the wayside that did not need to die. And it was really frustrating. This session feels very different to me in that there were very, very few things that ended up not getting over the finish line. And we also had a very unique and historic moment of having a lot of money. The Oregon State, budget was not hurting for money. There was a lot of one-time money in there. It was a historic moment. And we were like, if there was ever a time to invest in the people and the environment and like the things that need investment in the state, this is the time for that. And we asked for what we wanted, and we got a lot of what we wanted. So I actually think that this short session demonstrated that we can strategically ask for a lot and get a lot.
So what didn't you get that you wanted?
So there were a couple of bills that ended up not making it across the finish line. There was this, it was called the National Working Lands Bill, that would have helped fund a program to help our, make it so our state would be tracking and investing in sequestering carbon on natural and working lands, like farmlands, natural like lands in the state that people were owned, incentivizing people really like letting their land sequester carbon. And it just didn't get across the finish line, and we weren't able to get it funded. And it was just one of the bills that at the end of the day did end up, you know, whether through deal making or who knows what, it just didn't make it across the finish line. But, you know, when you look at all the things that we accomplished, that's, you know, we did get one of the bills that was similarly important was a $25 million budget ask for funding for drought mitigation in the state of Oregon that was really focused on wildlife and wildlands rather than, because there was a huge like special session for drought that was going to help people. And we're like, well, what about, you know, the natural environment? And so we got $25 million for drought. So, you know, there's just a lot of things that we asked for this session that came through. And we also had to put, frankly, a lot of effort into stopping some bad bills from passing. So that might be another thing that's worth touching base on.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about the bad bills because I heard about a few of them. And did any bad bills get passed?
Because to me, this is the story of the session. It's not woe is me, the things that didn't get done. We really got, you know, I looked through the hot list of bills that we were supporting and we got almost all of them. But the bills that were introduced that were problematic were numerous. so it was like whack-a-mole for us, but it was really challenging because some of them were new concepts and some of them were concepts that they've been pushing for a long time. We went into this session knowing that there would be a push to put an extra $1 million into the Wolf Compensation Fund so that ranchers could be reimbursed for missing livestock, whether or not it could be proven that livestock went missing because of wolf predation. And that's just not how the Wolf Compensation Fund should be used. There's plenty of money in that fund for its purpose of reimbursing ranchers for, you know, livestock that have been killed by wolves. But you don't want to be using that fund for subsidizing ranchers for missing livestock. And so we had to really put a lot of work into stopping that bill from passing. And then, yeah.
How did you do that?
We had to... numerous organizations that work, you know, to fight for wildlife, Defenders of Wildlife, Oregon Wild, our organization, OLCV, and others all had to get together and organize very last minute, by the way. We're talking like 24-hour period, maybe 48 hours notice tops, to testify against the bill and submit, you know, written testimony against the bill at very last minute for these hearings in the middle of the day and get, in this case, actually have legislators sometimes be rather disrespectful to our input that is, you know, that was given. And at the end of the day, that bill, the work session for that bill ended up getting canceled, but it was scheduled. And the work session is what has to happen for folks who are listening. A work session is like the final step that happens before a bill moves to Ways and Means or to the floor. So, I mean, that's a big deal when a work session is scheduled. So we really had to pull out all the stops to try to, and we labeled that bill a major threat. The Oregon Conservation Network made it very clear that that was not just a bill we disliked, it was a bill we were going to put effort into killing, and it got that far. So,
well, it's interesting to me because there is this divide in Oregon, particularly its geographic east side versus west side, not so much urban versus rural. I think that it's more actually east side versus west side. But the east side of the state has had a lot of influence on policies around wolf predation and wolf takings. And I'm wondering how that was overcome, because I think in the past that bill might have passed.
I mean, there have been many attempts to pass similar legislation. And normally what happens is it doesn't get scheduled for a hearing. So it was unique this session that it actually moved as far as it did. And I think that just comes down to politics, frankly, you know.
Now, were there any other really bad bills that didn't make it that you were happy to see die an ignoble death?
There was similarly wolf related. I think this is going to be an issue we're going to have to, you know, continue working on. There was a predator controls district bill that was introduced and got scheduled for a public hearing that would reinstate a program that has sunsetted, which we were happy to see sunset, that basically it's a predator damage control district. So it basically would have allowed it would have created an additional revenue stream for a state agency whose entire purpose, a federal agency whose entire purpose is to kill wildlife. We don't really think that that agency needs more money to go out there and kill, you know, additional wildlife species. And that what was so telling here is that there were separate bills, you know, that are touching on separate subjects. But basically, you know, folks wanted to be reimbursed for missing livestock, and more money for killing wolves. And we were just like, we need to have a rational conversation about the wolf management plan. And we need to be able to have an honest conversation about how we're managing this in a holistic way, because there was, and because we keep on fighting these fights over and over again.
Out of curiosity, I know that every session there's a bill proposed that would allow nukes to be built in Oregon again, which has been illegal for many, many years until there's actually safe repositories for nuclear waste. Was anything like that proposed this session?
Not to my knowledge. I mean, if it was, it was a non-starter for sure. But yeah, you know, and I think without getting into the weeds of other bills, there were a couple of other bills that were new bad ideas, whether it was on land use or deregulation of how we build housing, or some really interesting ideas about getting around certain land use policies by, you know, parading salmon as like something they care about. Anyway, like there was a lot of really interesting, creative, bad bills that got introduced that just gave us a sense of what we have in store for us in the upcoming session. So I feel like this session was unique in that there were a lot of bad bills we had to put a lot of effort into stopping. But really interestingly, we got a lot of what we asked for over the finish line. It's not the story of how much got left behind, which is what so often happens. I think that that is a gift of having a large budget.
So what's the status of all these bills we've been talking about? How many of them have passed? How many of them are still waiting to go through the final steps of becoming law?
So yeah, the farm worker overtime bill just passed today. So it's done. The governor just has to sign it. The Elliott State Research Forest Bill is going to pass the House tomorrow. I'm just calling it. The Emergency Heat Relief Bill is expected to be voted on in the House tomorrow, and we expect it to pass. The Environmental Justice Task Force has passed already, both chambers. The Private Forest Accord bills, most of them have passed. 1502, I believe, is the only one left that is going to be voted on tomorrow. And the Rebuild Task Force has passed both chambers already. And the CEI Hub, I think, has also passed both chambers. So, I mean, they're just plugging away. This thing might be, the legislative session may possibly end tomorrow. We shall see.
Tomorrow is March 4th. So for people who are listening to this show after tomorrow, yes. It might have already ended. And so you might be hearing some of this information already. It'll be in the local news media as well, I guess. Now, how much publicity is this session getting in the news? Do you feel like there's a lot of energy and excitement about what's going on? Or is this kind of only being tracked by political junkies like yourself?
No, it's actually there. Some of these bills have gotten international coverage, which is pretty exciting. Almost every single of the priority bills that we've listed has gotten both local and in some cases international or national press. So we're doing actually, I'll put it this way, Oregon is doing some historic things during a short session. It's pretty incredible.
Well, getting back to the very first question I asked you today, why do you think this is happening? What is different now than was different 2 years ago during the last short session, not to mention the long session prior to that one?
Well, I think it's a combination of things. Like I said, we had more money. Not having to have a cuts budget is pretty life-altering. We have new folks in the building. We've got new leadership. But more importantly, it was the confluence of years-long processes of stakeholders hammering out really contentious issues and coming to the legislature with solutions. I mean, we have not done that before. You know, the Elliott and the Private Forest Accords are the tail end of years of hard work from the stakeholders. And the legislature asked them to get together and get it done, and they did. And then the legislature, you know, darn well better respect that process and pass the legislation, which is what they're doing. So I think it's a culminating moment of all of those things coming together.
Well, you're listening to Locus Focus here on KBRU Community Radio in Portland, Seattle stations KBFG, LPFM, and Cody XLPFM, KMUN and KCBB in Astoria, KCEI in Taos, New Mexico, Radio Free Moscow in Idaho, and Radio Tacoma. And today we're talking with Julia DeGraw, Oregon League of Conservation Voters Coalition Director, about what is transpiring in Salem as the 2022 short session draws to a close. And I want to remind you that now is a good time to become a member of KABU during our winter pledge drive. KABU has trained thousands of people how to make radio, all for free, thanks to the support we receive from our members. So please support this vital community institution and help us meet our $15,000 goal by going to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Or you can mail a check to KABU FM, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. And thanks for supporting community-powered radio. Well, in the last part of this hour, let's talk about the lessons learned from this session. What are you looking forward to the next session, which will just be a year from now?
Yeah, I'm already kind of losing sleep over how quickly the next legislative session is going to come. But what I think is so exciting is a lot of what happened this session laid the groundwork for what has to happen next session. We got this task force that's going to be looking at decarbonization of buildings, which is going to be huge. We got some pretty major forest policy passed this session, but I think there's some still very large unanswered questions around how we do forest taxation in the state of Oregon. I think that's going to be a big conversation in the 2023 session. And I think we're going to continue to have conversations about what we need to be doing to address climate. You know, transportation is the largest source of carbon emissions in the state of Oregon, and we're going to have to start tackling these really big issues in the next session. So I think, you know, folks should be staying tuned. We're going to continue to build on the progress that's been made in this session, and also preparing for defending against potentially problematic bills in the next session too. So we have to, like, you know, play some offense and defense.
Well, speaking of transportation, wasn't there a transportation bill?
Yeah, there's always some amount of transportation and transportation bill. For the Oregon Conservation Network for the short session, we didn't have a big transportation bill for this session, but I do believe that's going to probably be a big topic for the upcoming full session.
Let's talk a bit about what that would look like, because, I mean, transportation is, I guess it's transportation and buildings are the two biggest sources of carbon emissions, as far as I think.
No, 100%. You're completely accurate. The number one is transportation. Number two is buildings.
So what do we do about transportation?
You know, Barbara, I'm a coalition director, so I really rely on my partners who are experts in transportation to answer questions like that. So I know enough to know that we are going to be, it can't just be about electrification, although that's obviously going to be part of how we move forward, but it has to do with changing how we spend huge amounts of transportation dollars on building, you know, infrastructure that is more conducive to the future that we need, right? So I would just urge you to stay tuned and probably have Sarah Wright on your show from Oregon Environmental Council, because she'll be able to really do a deep dive with you on that.
Actually, I tried to get her on before because I want to talk more about ODOT. I've been trying to find out what's really going on with ODOT. But I think the big transportation infrastructure piece that's right in front of us right now is this plan to widen the I-5 freeway for quite a while. They're calling it the bridge replacement, but it's actually a freeway widening,
right,
with a small bridge replacement part of it.
Right.
So I think that those are the kinds of questions we'll be looking at. I wonder how that issue could play into possible legislation next year.
I've been so all engrossed in the short session that I'm not quite sure. I do get asked questions about it, and I again will be working with our partners on what needs to be done on that project. But I don't know how it's going to play into the legislature. I just don't know right now.
Well, I just get this really exciting feeling about what's passed. And you've mentioned the reasons why you think this session was different from others, but I wonder if there's something else, maybe more cosmic. I mean, the other thing that we could throw out is, how much has COVID affected what's going on, do you think? Because, I mean, COVID has shut down our lives in so many ways, but it's also opened up so many pathways that I think we never experienced before.
I think what was, I mean, legislators who I think went into a virtual reality, you know, kind of kicking and screaming, have realized, oh my goodness, I'm hearing from so many more people than I've heard from before. You know, constituents can engage from their homes in their democracy in a much more direct way. So I do think that that COVID has made it easier for people to participate, and it actually limited access from some of the more nefarious forces, right? You know, you've got some special interest lobbyists who can't just hover outside of your door and wait for you to step outside, right? You know, so it was a little bit more, it kind of leveled the playing field in that way and actually increased the power of individual citizens in their legislature. So I think that has been a pretty big deal. I don't know that it's a fully answerable question about what's so different, but we are definitely living in a world in which, is it the Overton window? The window of possibility has expanded. What wasn't realistic even, 5 years ago was suddenly, an idea worth entertaining, And I think it's a really exciting time to be doing this work.
Well, I'm just thinking about the times that we're in right now, and it's such a mix of horror and excitement. I mean, we're talking while Ukraine is under intense bombardment and invasion, and that's this reality that's just very hard to put aside. And then, of course, the climate crisis gets worse and worse. And it was like after following the war in Ukraine for a week, and then to get here about the IPCC, their latest assessment on the climate, which is like even more dire than. Though actually, it's 2 years ago, it was 9 years. So I guess we're really not that, they're on track. But just thinking about these things and looking forward to the summer and maybe another heat dome and all these things that we just have having existential angst about, I wonder how that plays into this other piece of optimism and how maybe we can use all the horrors we're going through to buoy the optimism and the power to move forward.
Yeah, no, I think that those things are motivational to create change. And I think that in a world where climate change is actually happening and the consequences are very real, it becomes a lot harder to just slip back on your politics and say, oh, we're not doing it. It's like you're going to say, we can't do the thing that's necessary to combat climate change without bipartisan support. It's like, are you really going to put partisanship over saving lives and the planet? It's like we're getting to a point where I think folks are just realizing what is necessary to do what needs to be done and are more willing to step up to the plate and make it happen.
I've been thinking about how the war in Ukraine has brought the entire world together in opposition to what Russia's doing. And this time it doesn't feel like the Cold War anti-communism. It's about democracy. It's about war crimes. It's about the things we really care about. And I wonder how, if we can bring the world together in the same way about climate.
I've actually had similar thoughts. And I think that it'll be interesting to see how or if we're able to do that. I don't know what to say. I couldn't do this work if I didn't believe that change was possible, and if I wasn't in my heart an optimist, because why else try?
Well, Julia, once the session's over, how are you going to spend the next few days?
I might sleep a lot, go grocery shopping, the simple things, visit my family. But no, I am looking forward to catching my breath and then, getting back to work.
And what will that be?
The work will be, like I said, we got to actually start preparing for the next legislative session. I think that the biggest mistake you can make is act like when the session isn't happening, that there's nothing happening. it's like everyone is working between sessions and you better be working too. So I'm looking forward to having continued conversations with my coalition partners about what's coming next and making sure that we're laying solid groundwork for making sure that bills that were passed this session are set up to succeed making sure that we're ready to push for whatever is coming next.
So what do you think was the biggest lesson that you've learned from this session?
I think the biggest lesson I learned from this session was that we actually can get a lot more done than we think we can when we are really prepared and have really strong, broad coalitions that are all aiming in the same direction and working together. I was talking to my friends earlier on in the session when things were just really fast and wild and you just couldn't keep track of everything and you couldn't do everything. You had to rely on other people to get things done and to just hope that it was getting done. And I was telling my friend, that just feels like one gigantic trust fall. I'm just like hoping everyone is doing what they need to do because I can't manage it. And it was like, and we all caught each other. I mean, that sounds a little sappy. I just realized it came out of my mouth, but it's like, it really did feel like, I'm not saying it was perfect, you know, like there's some, like, you know, there's a couple of things that didn't get passed or whatever, but, I think that we are all kind of collectively learning how to be, you know, build really strong, powerful coalitions to pass meaningful legislation. And we're going to keep doing that.
Well, Julia, thanks so much for being on Locus Focus. It's great to get a legislative update from you. And I look forward to hearing more about the work that you can be doing in the non-session time.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for having me.
We've been talking with Julia DeGraw with the Oregon League of Conservation Voters, and you've been listening to Locus Focus on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Seattle stations KBFG LPFM and KODX LPFM, KMUN and KCBB in Astoria, KCEI in Taos, New Mexico, Radio Free Moscow in Idaho, and Radio Tacoma. If you're just tuning in and you'd like to hear what you missed, or you want your friends or family to hear this show, you can listen to a podcast on our website, kboo.fm/locus-focus. To hear previous episodes of this show or any of our KBOO Public Affairs programming, go to kboo.fm or listen on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. I want to give special thanks to the KBOO staff who are doing an incredible job of not only keeping KBOO on the air, but helping all us volunteers make the best radio possible from home during this pandemic. And you can help us during our Winter Pledge Drive by becoming a member of KBOO or renewing your membership if you're already a member. We're independent, community-supported, volunteer-powered radio. Go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Or please support the community station you're listening to right now. Thanks for supporting community-powered radio. I'm Barbara Bernstein. Next week, we'll talk with Columbia Riverkeeper staff attorney Aaron Saylor about another frack gas pipeline that's trying to come our way. We'll go out with a tune I wrote. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, wash your hands, get your COVID shots, and remember to socially distance when necessary and wear a mask.
Right where you're standing, a river is rising. There go the tourists, here come the refugees. You fly from midsummer's night to the darkness of winter in a flicker of light. If you're a tourist, if you're a refugee. If you're a tourist, if you're a refugee.